Thanks. And thanks to Nabil and the team. I'm used to running events myself, and this was like the most hands-off event I've ever been a part of, which is nice. Although I did have to prep the talk, so I guess that's work. Yeah, so like Nabil said, I'm Matt. Bear with me, I'm not doing my presentation in a presentation tool. I figured it's a design talk. I'll do it in a design tool. The behavior's a little different. Anyway, I'm Matt. That's me on Twitter, because that's what, why not? Hit me up. Yeah, like Nabil said, I just joined ZenReach. We're part of the terminal space right now. I'm gonna get into what we're doing later. I'm not that relatively famous. I guess relative is the key term there. Relative to what is the question. And hopefully this is a bit of a treat, but we'll go with relative treat for today. So, with most design talks, I do like to kind of talk about how I got here. I know there's a bit of a mixed crowd here, some more experienced designers, some earlier, and I just like sharing that you don't really need to take a traditional design path into design to get there. So I like sharing a little bit about my path. It's a very tight space. I like to move. So I started at UW. I actually studied kinesiology and ergonomics, which kind of touches on human factors, systems design, engineering, stuff like that. I won't bore you with the details. I spent, obviously, 4 or 5 years doing that. Though I wanted to drop out, I didn't. I just spent my class time designing websites. And then, kind of in my last year, I moved into co-founding a company called Tripsar. And this was a peer-to-peer, or it was trying to be, a peer-to-peer marketplace for trips planned by locals and like local experiences. So if you've been on Airbnb recently, it's kind of their experiences thing, just still alive. The funny story there is, at the same time we were building Tripsar, Airbnb was actually building out experiences attempt number one. In partnership with another company that was doing something very similar to what we were doing. And I think it was within about the same month, they shut down their attempt the same time we did. So that was validation that we were doing the wrong thing or the right thing at the wrong time. But that and many other lessons were learned along the way. And then I moved into Chalk, which was going from travel to edtech. And that was also a big learning experience. I was there for about 2.5 years. We were building out a suite of tools for teachers and eventually students and administrators. It's kind of like a G Suite for education, even though G Suite is used in education. That's a bad comparison. But it was another G Suite for education. And I started in the design role there and eventually moved into more of a product role, overseeing product and engineering. And then at the same time, I had kind of just come back. I took some time out of the region after Tripsar, did some consulting, and then came back when I started at Chalk. And being in a design role, I didn't really know anybody in town. I knew like 2 designers, Kevin, my design partner at Chalk, and Riley, who's now at Atomic. And so we kind of met together every couple weeks, grabbed breakfast, chatted design. We were kind of our own support network. We called it Designer's Breakfast, I think, at that point. And it had a cool little egg logo. It was fun. And we eventually started inviting people kind of like one at a time that we knew in the design community. And eventually, within like 2 months, it was over 20 people trying to jam into little cafes in KW to talk design. And then we outgrew those spaces, so we started running bigger and bigger events. And so that was a really good opportunity to mesh with the design community, talk to people who are in different experiences, and really share their stories. So I learned quite a bit through that, just in talking to people. Networking is huge. And then that really led me into my next role. And so now I've done travel, I've done some ed tech, and then I moved into industrial robotics and automation. Logical. Some of you may not recognize this logo, but if I said ClearPath Robotics, you probably would recognize it. I see some head shaking. So Otto is a division of ClearPath Robotics, and the main focus is on self-driving, autonomous, industrial vehicles. And by vehicles, I mean large black boxes that drive around. They don't look like vehicles. But there was a really cool opportunity coming from where I was and getting into this whole new world where design was not just software, it was now vehicles and human interaction with robots, which was like a whole new world for me. And then, of course, now I'm here. And Zenreach, I'll give the spiel. We're essentially trying to close the gap between the online and offline worlds. So online e-commerce, there's a lot of metrics. You can get a lot of data on like how ads are performing. Offline brick and mortar stores don't really have that. There's kind of this void where there's a lot of guessing games. They're like, well, 50% of people probably buy stuff. And they have no way to actually measure that. So we're the way that they can measure that. So going from industrial robotics into like ad tech and martech is a new world, but again, lots of learning. So again, I do this to show that you can start in kinesiology and ergonomics and end up like in a martech startup after going through three or four different industries. Don't worry if you can't find a job yet. You'll get there. Keep learning. The other interesting thing about this is across all of these companies, the size and the ratios of design to employees changes drastically. So obviously at Tripsar, there was like 2 to 5 of us because we were failing startup from the beginning. And I was the designer. Funny enough, my first design there was actually done in Keynote, and I thought it was good until I looked at it 2 years later. It was awful. And then Chalk, we were more like 25 people and had 2 designers. And then I went to ClearPath, and it was like a 10x jump in people. And technically, we only started with 2 designers, and then we moved up to 3. So the like employee jump was changing drastically, which also meant the culture was changing drastically. So not just design culture, but also the culture at the company. I'm gonna try and leave this open without spilling all over my laptop. See if it's possible. So for instance, at Chalk, it was kind of like a really tight-knit family, like everybody was close. We could talk about something and we could bring up a design problem and everybody's kind of in the room within earshot and talking about it. And then we go to ClearPath, and at the time, I think we had 3 different buildings, 220 people, and Otto was really spun out of the research engineering department. So the ClearPath Robotics does a lot of research projects with universities, military, stuff like that. So very like open source, engineering heavy, and Otto was spun out of that. And so when we came in, my boss, Bobby, and I, it was still a very engineering-centric culture. And design kind of had some attempts, but didn't really take off. And that showed. Like, it was very engineering-driven still, feature-wise, product-wise. And that reflected. That was like a stark contrast to where I was coming from. And then Zenreach, I'm still early, so I don't fully know the culture, but there's definitely like a lot of interest in learning about design. Some of the developers, no, they're great. There's a lot of interest in design, and design has kind of been part of the bloodline for a while. So I'm curious to see how that grows. But yeah, every company has a different culture. And what do I mean by design culture? If you ask every designer, it's going to be a different answer. So I grabbed other people's answers. But essentially, it's about focusing on the user, right? So rediscovering the human side of business, or organizational culture focused on approaches that improve customer experiences through design. The wordy one's Wikipedia. But essentially, you're focused on the user and developing products for the goal of improving a customer experience, right? Across the board. This isn't just the design team. And in a lot of my conversations with the design community through design chats, I've spoken to a lot of solo designers, small design teams. That's very prevalent in the region. That was the reason I started it. And one of the common questions is, how can I influence the design culture? It's usually a small team. There's like maybe a lot of engineers, or they're in like a 2,000 person company. They don't really have the resources themselves, and they feel like their work's not being recognized. And that can be tough. It can really kill motivation to do your work. So this is, other than how do I get a job, is probably the second most popular question I hear in the design community. And so I want to talk about like four main pillars on how to change that. These aren't exhaustive. These are really just from my experience and things that have worked in the past. They don't necessarily all work together, but they're kind of ideas. And I'll open up to questions in the end. I only have like three more hours to go. And then we'll turn it over to questions. So collaboration. Obviously, when you're a small design team, you need to collaborate with others to kind of make your impact larger. One or two designers in a big company, there's a lot of work to do. Even with 5 or 10, there can still be a lot to do. So you need to leverage others. Try not to work in silos. One of the first things I noticed at ClearPath was the structure was very siloed. Everyone was kind of working in their own project teams, and then eventually a project would pass along. We thought it was agile, but it was really waterfall. And in the end, it like ended up on design's plate to kind of make a nice wrapping for it. And obviously, that we know that doesn't really work well. So what ended up happening is we kind of kept pushing those boundaries. We would go and work with other teams when we had a project, go and sit next to people, and try and push those silo boundaries, which eventually led to working in feature teams. So rather than silos, we kind of like picked a feature and cut across the whole organization, brought everybody in from the beginning, and had those conversations in real time, which works much better. Getting involved in projects across the organization. So by getting involved, I don't mean you have to be designing projects across the organization. So again, for us, we were software and hardware. The software side was our main focus, but we also wanted to leverage design on the hardware side. So getting involved, even just sitting in rooms and kind of being a plain consultant to the hardware teams or like another team, it doesn't have to be a big time sink, but you can provide your knowledge across the organization and bring other people into your projects as well. Don't dictate to development. So I've seen this a few times where design teams will just kind of be like, here you go, this is what we're building. And it's very like isolated, kind of looping back to the silo thing. And obviously that's not great. Development teams don't like that, and it doesn't really make good designs. So what I like to encourage people to do is sit down and have a conversation. We're gonna talk about sharing early and often later, but when you have something rough, sit down. Like build a rapport with your development teams and have conversations about the best way to implement something. You may be smart, but you don't know everything. So share with other people, don't dictate, have a conversation and collaborate. The next piece is evangelism. So maybe a bit of a buzzword. You hear about like Apple product evangelists, Adobe has them, a lot of big companies have these evangelists. And essentially their job is to go and share the power of their products. So Guy Kawasaki is a famous Mac evangelist who's now at Canva. And essentially his whole job is going out and kind of sharing the benefits of using that tool. So in the same way, we kind of need to be evangelists for design within our own organizations and share essentially what it can do. Because a lot of people have this inkling of what design is and that they need it somehow. So you'll see companies just kind of hire designers because they're like, everybody else is doing it, we need it. But they don't know why or how to leverage it. So one way of doing this is sharing early and often. We like to kind of treat our designs as designers as like our babies, and we don't release them until they're perfect. and polished, because we don't want to be kind of embarrassed that we sent something ugly out into the world. Don't do that. Share early and often. Get your stuff out there. Collaborate with designers by doing this. Talk to product. Talk to customer teams that might have feedback. And just share those concepts constantly. We'll get into some other ways of doing that. Creating a core ambassador group is a great way of doing this. So at ClearPath, we had a group of kind of field team people that were regularly good at providing feedback. So we kind of created a group for them. At Chalk, we had a group of teachers that regularly were active and engaged. And so we would regularly share concepts with them. They didn't have to be roadmap. They were just kind of design concepts, and we'd start a conversation about it. Being a broken record. So especially in bigger organizations, it can take time for these ideas to kind of land. I know at ClearPath, Bobby, my boss, provided several presentations about UX and kind of like creating that culture. And I think he did the same presentation, slightly modified, 3 or 4 times within 2 years. And the thing is, like, people come and go. People aren't always focused. Their reception to that message changes over time. So be a broken record. Keep sharing your message. And eventually, it'll start sticking. It's not going to take hold right on the first go. And then promote results. So we know kind of inherently that design has benefits. And we know when something's working. We might even have the metrics to do it. Sometimes it's just gut feel. We should have metrics. But promote the results when you have them. So an example of this is from Chalk. We had a hunch about a sign-up flow that we thought could be significantly improved. It was a little bit of a long shot of a goal. But myself and a developer sat down and we kind of riffed on it for a couple weeks, built a prototype, started testing that, and the results were like, it was like 60% better or something, something ridiculous. And so we shared that back to the team and really started a dialogue about how we can pull those design elements forward into other products and other signup flows. And then educating and equip. This kind of is like evangelism, but it's a bit more strategic. So if you are a small team, you kind of need to leverage others and get others thinking about design. I'm trying not to say design thinking, because it's a buzzword, but thinking about design. Because you can't do all this work yourselves, but if you equip other teams to be able to do some of that work, then it can help accelerate the uptake of design. So some of the ways of doing this are making resources available. I think in my first month here, I had 2 engineers ask about design resources that they could look at to learn a little bit about UX and just get a better understanding of what we're doing. And that's actually led into my last point about lunch and learns. And articulating design decisions, I think, is a really big one. I think video is one of the most underutilized tools as designers. And one of the things we found at ClearPath was there was usually a disconnect between, like during our handoff process, between what the design intent was and engineering's understanding. And I think using video to articulate what you're thinking about a design, A, helps with that communication barrier, and B, also helps equip other teams because they can understand and learn how you think through a process. So we would just take really raw concepts, start talking about them in a screen grab, really raw, nothing polished, and just walk through and say, hey, we did this because of X, and we did this because of Y. This is what we're thinking. This could be another option. And as soon as we started putting out those videos, the uptake and reception from development was huge. And we just hear them like, oh yeah, I watched your video the other day, and I have these thoughts on this and this. And I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? And we had just like left them on a web page, and they started watching them. So explain why, as they learn more of that process from you, people will start thinking that way too. And then be a coach. So if you're in meetings, if you're kind of consulting, be a coach. Give words of advice on how to change process or make things more efficient. So if a team is like going really far on a prototype and not iterating very quickly, or they're like, oh, that's gonna take me forever to figure out which iteration I like best, show them like paper prototyping, or like, you can build this with a cardboard box, test out different things faster. So just coach and guide other teams along the design process and about design thinking. And then listen. So if you're kind of taking in all this feedback and creating spaces for people to share and communicate, feedback's kind of useless if you don't listen, or at least show that you're listening. You don't have to implement changes to it, but show that you're listening. So if somebody's really eager to share feedback and they just keep giving it and keep giving it and it's just like going into this void, they're probably less likely to give it. So create a culture that's kind of safe to share in. So creating safe spaces, whether this is like a dedicated Slack channel or a forum, or even just a forum, like a regular monthly meeting where people can come and share feedback, make it safe and okay to share. There's some design or some company cultures that are just like very against that. As designers, you can help change that and make people feel safe. And then the respond to feedback. So there's a few different ways to do this and track it. There's like a million tools for tracking user feedback and connecting it into a roadmap or doing different things. I really like Trello. It's simple. You can use Jira tickets, Road Monk. There's like six different road tools. But I like Trello. And at Chalk, what we did, we had like a very aggressive feedback channel. We did live chat with teachers all day. Teachers like to give feedback a lot. So we had like endless streams of feedback coming in. And I just had some giant Trello board that tracked everything. And then every time we got a new comment, we would add it onto the card. And the other piece on the follow-up is tag who provided that feedback. One of the most valuable things, like both internally and with external customers, is when you follow up when somebody gave feedback. So if Justin here gave me feedback, and then 2 months later I'm working on a concept design or implementing a new feature, and I follow up with Justin and say, hey, you gave me this feedback 2 months ago. Do you mind testing this concept that I'm working on to validate whether this solves your feedback? That goes like really far, because it really shows that, oh, they listened and like they're paying attention, especially with internal teams. Don't just do it with customers. And then reiterate what you've heard. So it's one thing to respond to feedback, create concepts. Oh, the other piece of this is if you can respond really quickly with rough concepts, the other method is Jira. I really like creating Jira tickets, writing out a concept, doing a quick wireframe, and dropping it right on like within the week. It creates a faster feedback cycle and allows people to respond while it's still in their mind. So that's another thing. But reiterate. So for example, when you're doing a product presentation, I really like adding a slide at the beginning with some snippets of feedback and just showing, hey, this is coming from field. Here's some different quotes that we heard. This is why we're building this feature. And it just shows, it's just another way of showing that feedback is being listened to. This is how we're addressing it. Keep it coming. And then, of course, there's like so many other ways to go about this. These are some other ideas that have been used that work. Again, design principles or persona posters, plastering things around the office, just getting exposure. Another gem from Bobby at ClearPath is the UX hall. So we had a pretty vacant hallway in our office that was just used for old furniture and phone calls, pretty much. So we moved in a bunch of whiteboards and like 400 post-it notes, posted up some design concepts, printed out journey maps, basically decked the place out and designed things. And the cool part about that is when people went to go take phone calls or were just walking through it, There's now all this design stuff plastered on the wall, and they can like stop in and check out a concept, see kind of what we were planning, and again, sparked conversation. Design Web Hub is another way of doing that. Just kind of getting concepts and projects. It doesn't have to be roadmap stuff. It can be cool ideas that you're working on. Resources, going back to the Educate tab. Just a place that people know. And when questions come in, you can just kind of point back to that. And if you have a cool, catchy URL, it's even better. Because everything was internal at ClearPath. Ours was just UX slash. It was sweet. And then, yeah, raw concept videos, Slack channels. We talked about this before. Just get stuff out early and often. Companies like Shopify do like regular show and tell presentations where engineering and design can demo stuff. That's really awesome as well. And then these kind of go together, the design project and concept backlog. Keep things documented so that when feedback comes in, if you had that idea, more often than not, you're kind of thinking ahead. And you might even have a solution to that already ready. So if feedback comes in, you can just say, hey, I have this Jira ticket ready. Give me your feedback on that. Obviously, you have to find what works in your organization. And all of these things have worked at one point or another. So when I left Otto, the design culture was like so drastically different. It was really exciting to see. We went from barely being able to get UX projects onto the roadmap to like UX plastered all over engineering slide decks. Like every presentation I saw, it became a priority really quickly because we had articulated kind of what the benefit was. And we had like field teams talking about design. We had engineering teams talking about design. So it was really encouraging to see how things had transitioned into this amazing UX-focused environment. It became really clear that that was the market differentiator. And I mean, it took some time. It took some being a broken record, but we got there. And these are just some other advantages. You know, you're amplifying your effectiveness as a small team. You can change the project focus from very like feature and engineering, like task-based, to very customer-focused. And addressing needs quickly. Obviously, customer satisfaction can go up if you do it right. And then you just get a more collaborative, like generally happier team working on products and solving problems. Oh, and much more. And now I'll flip it back for questions. Because there's probably lots of people with other ideas and other experiences, so let's hear them.
So if you have a question, if you just raise your hand, we'll bring the mic over to you, if you don't mind. Okay, just one more. 30 minutes. Okay, this isn't so much a serious question. Hey.
Okay.
But when navigating between slides, were you arrow keying, or did you put in tap targets?
The whole artboard is a tap target. With auto animate in yeah. XD.
I was bugging.
I definitely built it so the arrow keys kind of broke everything. So I tried not to hit those.
Okay, we got a couple questions right here.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you think about agile in respect to design, whether that poses new challenges or you fully embrace that approach.
Good question. I definitely like aspects of Agile. I don't think I've been in a place where design is necessarily plugged right into the Agile workflow. I've been in places where design is working behind and like scrambling to fulfill ticket, and I've been on the other side, sometimes in the same place. We've kind of gone back and forth. Ideally, design is like working a little bit ahead of the Agile workflow and having at least concepts mostly baked, and then once that comes up into the engineering roadmap, working collaboratively, like in real time, along with the sprints. But I think it's good to get ahead and build out concepts kind of before that comes up on the engineering agile timeline. But definitely start the discussions ahead of time. Feature teams are great. Did that answer? Okay.
Hi, I'm actually a long-time software developer, not designer. However, I have used XD in the last year out of necessity. My question is...
Enjoy, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like to say I'm a developer that's built a lot of software that only a software developer could love. my question is about building up... So, new company, very engineering-focused, built the product, no designers, but eventually would like to have designers... Mm-hmm. as part of the team. Can you comment on what we as the software development side of the house can do to sort of facilitate being able to bring on designers? Or what sort of things should we think about if we don't have a designer, but saying, hey, we're gonna want a designer? Is there anything you're gonna think of there? That's...
I think I'm prepared for that one.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of resources available. I'm happy to send you stuff. Just on like what design thinking is. I'll send you all the buzzwords so that you can talk about it. But just understanding kind of like the process and the thinking behind design. It's not like it's rocket science. It's just sometimes it takes reading about it, understanding how that might fit into your process and development process. But it takes, like, it changes for each company, so there's not really a fixed process that you can use. You kind of have to get somebody in there. Definitely look at somebody who's maybe built a process before or integrated. And then you kind of have to figure it out as you go. You're literally designing a process, so you'll use design to fit them in.
Is there a question back?
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
How you doing? So a lot of that resonated with me quite a bit because I just joined a company where I'm the first designer, the first sort of real designer that they've had. And I'm trying to build like a culture, like a design culture somewhat. So I'm starting from scratch, like I'm building alliances, talking about, about the strategy and what my intent is.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had that experience where you're the only designer in the company and you have to sort of, build that, build those alliances? And how do you go about doing that?
It's not much different than just kind of networking. I haven't been the only designer. I've usually been designer number two in. But that still can be a lot of work for two people to go and do that. I've been in situations where I'm like the main designer locally and then somebody's remote, so you kind of need to be the feet on the ground. But really it's just kind of starting conversations. Don't go in expecting to change the world in a couple meetings. It takes time, and again, like doing some of these things repeatedly. So what seemed to work for me was in the past, probably a lot of these companies aren't used to people just coming down and sharing ideas. So again, going back to the share early and often, I would take concepts and prototypes and just say, hey, can I just grab 30 minutes at lunch and kind of walk through ideas and be like, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this? That works good for like field and customer facing teams. And then with development, just like listening, understanding what they're trying to do. And don't come in like firing off and be like, well, we need to change this and do this. Ask why. Ask like, why did we build it this way? Why is your button that color? And you'll kind of, I've got questions. but just ask those questions, kind of be a friend, have honest conversations and don't expect to like be changing things right away. It does take time. Don't be a jerk.
So I have like an extensive design portfolio from working in the arts, and I'm just like leaving one career in the arts, wanting to go into tech. What's mm-hmm. the biggest challenge of like going from working on your own freelance to fitting into like tech culture and speaking tech? Like my partner is in tech, and y'all have a whole world that is
yeah.
like kind of scary. So how do you transition from like arts and like such like a polar opposite, but you have a really good portfolio and getting your foot in the door. Like, what are some of the challenges you had?
That's a good question. I'm not a great person to answer that. Mostly because I just started a company to get into tech, and I've never really had a good portfolio. So the exact opposite. A lot of the time that advice comes back to networking and talking to people, just like integrating the design into a company. I think a lot of it, a lot of where I've gotten to has been in conversations and building relationships. And so whether that's, even if you don't like talking to people in tech, going out and grabbing coffee, because we love to do that, or, well, actually we love to do beers. So drink a lot of beer and just have conversations and get to know the people. We're not that scary. But yeah, beyond that, I can't really give too much advice. Other than you probably don't need to spend as much time on your portfolio in the areas you are that you think you do, if that made any sense. Yeah, okay. Cool.
And hearing your presentation, you mentioned that avoid working in silos, and then you use some tools, right? And then you want like your design team to get feedback and engage the like development team so that they can collaborate together. Mm-hmm. So I wonder that since you mentioned the tools like Jira, Trello, those things, how do you in your like work, how do you get them engaged the working with other team? Just with a meeting? So do you use a tool, and how do you use the tool to get them engaged? The only reason I ask that, I actually do working with some Atlassian only selling.
Okay.
So I wonder how customers actually use that to help them collaborate in their project.
So are you talking about customers or like internal employees? Right. Good question. So with like Trello and stuff like that, that was more of a documentation thing. And then I would essentially send out weekly, monthly reports based on here's our top feedback items, here's what we're doing to address them. So that was less about collaboration. There's other ways to go about that. Like a lot of design tools now are doing live collaboration or sharing. And you can bring people right inside. If that fits in your process, that's great. What I like about Jira is it's one way to kind of meet people where they are. So when working with development teams, rather than like going off and making your own task management tool, it's kind of handy to fit in with development teams are usually using Jira. So if you build your tickets in Jira, you can link them. You can keep conversations and documentation all together. People have differing opinions on Jira, but keeping it where development is, I think, is a good way. Product management is usually in there as well. So you're not necessarily like directly collaborating, but everything's in one space. And it's not like you're keeping things out here that nobody has a license to, and then they have to like ask you every time. So make it really easy, lower the barriers. Yeah, so the way we set it up was essentially we had a design project and then the engineering projects for each team. But what it allowed is if we had projects ready to go, we could mark them as ready for development. If they weren't ready or we were waiting on something, they didn't even start until the design stuff was ready, or at least we were having the conversation around it. So it, the statuses do give visibility into kind of what should I pick up next and who should I talk to.
So earlier you mentioned about being a coach to other teams. So I was curious if you could elaborate on it a bit further and talk about like how the coaching might, or the topics might change depending on what team you're speaking to.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if Bobby's online, but I'm going to use him a lot because he's a really good coach. So for instance, at ClearPath, there's hardware, software, there's different types of engineering teams. And so their processes are all different. what constitutes a prototype or like an MVP changes based on team. So in that situation, yes, the actual like meat and content is probably going to change based on what they're building, but the approach doesn't necessarily have to. So for instance, if you're, like I've done some packaging projects, so you can coach and say, okay, we don't need to go and like cat out this whole thing. We can just wrap a sheet of paper around it and like start drawing things out. And just kind of teaching some of the shortcuts that design uses into these other teams is a good way to go about it. You don't need to educate and like give a full process on all the different names and whatnot. Just kind of give them ideas and tools to work with and guide them along. Just provide feedback.
I have a follow up there, actually.
Yeah.
So how do you find that compares to or overlaps with like a product manager's role? Because a lot of their role, from my understanding, but from my understanding is that the product manager is making a lot of those like hard decisions as well. So
yeah.
How do you kind of balance that?
That's a good question. So the kind of product management design environment has shifted as I'm gone through different companies. And in different companies, there's been more or less presence. So like at Chalk, I just became the product manager as the design guy because there wasn't really anybody to fill that role. And to some degree, depending on the project, that existed as well at ClearPath. So yes, if it's available, product management can fill some of that role, but that's also more of like an overall product process. You can also kind of do the coaching and mentoring just within the design angle. But yeah, some of this feedback does bleed between PM and design. This is like one of the first roles where it's very clear cut. So I'm adapting to that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Question over here in the front.
Hi. You touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to know your opinion on setbacks and how you deal with setbacks with your team. So whether this is frustration, people miscommunication.
And what do you mean by setback?
So if you're dealing with like a developer or something and there's a misunderstanding, the design gets delayed, or you know, the design is not as it's optimal.
Right.
How do you deal with that setback?
Yeah, I've had plenty of those. And there's a few different areas. Obviously, communication gaps, it usually takes two. So it's not one person or the other's fault. I think the most common ones for me have been scope creep and just not understanding kind of what the intent was. Then there's also changes that are like, we had some idea on paper, like maybe like a one-liner that said, we kind of want this feature built, and design had some idea, and then engineering had another idea, and then one of them gets built, and it's like, oh, this is what it is. So those, again, just communication after the fact, postmortems. So at Chalk, I kind of led one that spun out of control scope-wise pretty aggressively. Thankfully, it was internal. But that like was supposed to be like a one-week project and turned into like four or five. It was a cool product at the end, but it wasn't what we intended to build. So just kind of bringing everybody back into a room, sitting down, doing a postmortem, and understanding, okay, what was the intent of that? And then what changes can we make in the process to prevent that? But I think the like sharing early, getting people into a room for like a feature team, preventing that like at the beginning is much more valuable, and asking those questions, even if it like takes a long time to get started on a project, asking those clarifying questions up front is better than trying to save it at the end.
Any other questions from the audience?
So when I was at company and I was a sole designer and I had like over 16 developers with me, and I've been trying to do like design research or try to tell the value of design, mm-hmm. like the developers understand and we collaborate well, but the business doesn't really understand. And like when I was trying to convince, it didn't really work out because I had to work on the project management, work on the project, and business think like developer needs work to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what to do now. So like, do you have any advice on those kind of situations?
Yeah, so doing most of this stuff over time will help get you to that. As more and more people in the company kind of talk about it and share those results and wins. Definitely like try and dig into metrics whenever you can. That's usually leadership language is numbers. So when you can get those, that's great. And if you can show that certain design initiatives are proving beneficial or how they are, understanding kind of what leadership's intents are and even going individual, whether you're having one-on-one conversations with them, if you can, and just kind of understanding what they see as design's role in the company. As you kind of learn that, you can kind of tailor your messaging and conversation to them. It's much like a user interview in a way. Yeah, it's tough. I've thankfully been blessed with every company having leadership that is design aware and enjoys design. Like ClearPath especially, Matt is a fantastic kind of design ambassador as the CEO. And Kai on our product team is really big into that, same with John, our CEO, and same at Chalk. So unfortunately, I don't have any really negative experiences with that. It's more from the like overall company standpoint. But yeah, like most of these will work in time.
Probably have time for just one last question. Is there any in the audience?
Okay.
Perfect. So if you could join me in a round of applause for Matt.